720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. In for Brian Noonan tonight until 9 o'clock. We've got Lee Scram, our producer, in the booth, spinning the hits, and also taking your calls at 312-981-7200 on a show where we're going to get away from all the, I guess, the disappointment that the Bears have provided, and great job by the guys kind of making sense of, or at least the best they can, of what has been so far a very disappointing Bears season with all of the, I guess, expectations for improvements. That's what you got. And but the Cubs, normally the source for soul-crushing disappointment when it comes to sports in Chicago, the Cubs are delivering in a different way. And as a fan, as a lifelong Cub fan, as I'm sure so many listeners are, I'm still kind of distrustful. You know, when it was that Tuesday game, that last game that they had in San Francisco, and it looked like this was going to be one of those things that was going to kind of take a turn. And with all those expectations, people being excited, that some Cub-related, you know, normal situations were going to happen, and the Cubs were going to turn back into the Cubs that we know and love, but I guess accept for all of their fault. But not this team. This team seems destined, and I don't think you can jinx it. You know, you sort of feel bad. I'm kind of a superstitious person, and you don't want to say things or get too excited about it. But you know, the city is going a little bit crazy. If you looked at that game last night when Miguel Montero hit that grand slam home run, and it's like you never know who it's going to be. Whether it's going to be the pitcher, you know, whether it's going to be you know, one of the catchers, is going to be a pinch hit, where it's going to be Javi Baez, where it's going to be defensive plays. The Cubs seem to, in different ways, all of those pieces in place. And Joe Maddon says things like, well, that's what they're here for. That's what, that's why they're on the roster. That's what we expect from them. So we'll be checking in, on the Cubs. I know at 8:30, Mark Carman is going to be calling in with a Cubs update. I know Dino Tiberi, a guy that you hear with me, often, you know, the number one, physical embodiment of Harry Carey, the channeler, as he's known, may call up from a rooftop as well. And you can let us know, 312-981-7200, how you celebrate the Cubs, how you watch it, how you best watch it, how you enjoy it. If you have a Cubs room, if you have a Cubs collection, one of the things we're going to do, throughout the course of the program, and everybody that texts in or calls in is going to be entered to win a Lou Malnati's pizza, is if you've got a collection, if you collect Cubs stuff. I know that there's a lot of memories being made this year for the Cubs, and you know, people are collecting things, whether it's you know, balls or memorabilia with the year on it, and all those kind of things. And and so do you have anything? I've got a 1984 pennant that says World Series, and even though they didn't make it, you know, they still print those up. So that's one of the things and one of the ways that you can participate. We're going to be talking some food as well. The Great Chicago Barbecue Tour happened, and it was an amazing experience. If you're a barbecue fan and you like to go into some of the history and some of those individuals, we'll have Famous Dave on with us, Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, Sweet Baby Ray. All those guys are going to be with us as well. And then we're going to cover some good causes, some really great causes. We've got a chef soiree. We've got the West Suburban Community Pantry event that's going on. So a lot of great things, a lot of great ways to participate. It's we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll have Chef Claudia Sandoval. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Dane Neal in for Brian Noonan until 9 p.m. tonight, on a night when so many great things are happening. There's great events, you know, all over this city and for a good cause. And I gotta say it is, in Chicago, we have some of the best, food events. Of course, a big shout out to the James Beard Awards, gonna be here till, and through 2021. So that, is awesome. Kind of solidifying Chicago is, you know, it was always kind of a second city to New York. And I know most people would still say that, but, you know, it's certainly one of America's greatest food cities and really contending for it, especially when you have great chefs and great events, working here in town. And on the line with us, we do have, Claudia Sandoval. She is a Master Chef winner, and, she also has her own self-titled cookbook, Claudia's Cocina, A Taste of Mexico, coming up. Actually, it's out right now. You can get it and, enjoy some of her work, and you can enjoy her, as well, coming up on, October 26th for the Saison Soiree. Chef Claudia, welcome to WGN.
Yeah.
Claudia?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hey, Chef, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I do have to let you know, though, you said the name of my book wrong. You said Claudia's dirty, essentially, in Spanish.
I apologize. Well, I have my notes here, and so I will. Well, let's correct it. So it says Claudia's Cocina, a taste of Mexico.
Yeah, it's Claudia's Cocina. So imagine that the C is an S.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We won't work a little blue tonight. So Claudia, talk about some of your experiences. Of course, people loved you on MasterChef, and that's exciting. And it's great when you know, as a chef, you get to do what you want to do. You get to go out there, cook the food that you want, and enjoy and kind of share your passion with people. But it's really nice to see when you get to that level where you've got that platform that you're using it to help great causes.
Yeah, you know, I've gotten the opportunity to have some incredible experiences. I mean, I'm in New York right now. I still can't believe that this is my life. And yes, you know, I think that giving back is a really big part of being able to use this platform in a very good way. I mean, I was very involved with a lot of nonprofits even before going on MasterChef. So being able to use this platform to really continue to, you know, shed light on some important causes is definitely right up my alley.
We're going to get into the event, you know, before we let you go, of course, but let's talk about, you know, your background and of course, you know, Mexican cuisine. Rick Bayless, we have here in town, has done a lot to raise awareness of all the different ways and elevated ways that you can enjoy it. But talk about taking, you know, your spin on Mexican cuisine and bringing it to the people.
Yeah, I think one of the best things about people like Rick Bayless and Enrique Olvera in New York and Chef Carlos Gaitan locally as well in first Michelin star Mexican restaurant in the United States. I mean, those things are huge, and I think that they've paved the way for Mexican food in the United States. I think the different approach that I bring is definitely a more coastal type of cuisine. My family reigns from, you know, Mazatlan, Mexico, which is very much a port town on the Pacific, and really focuses on that fresh seafood, very vibrant flavors, very bold flavors. And so being able to use that and bring it to the States and kind of share a region of Mexico that is only known for, unfortunately, it's violence. You know, I want to show that there's more to it than that. There's incredible seafood, incredible food, and it's been such a pleasure to be able to share that with people.
It is one of those things that kind of brings people together, one of those kind of universal unifying things is people's appreciation for food, and then you can learn so much about the culture and the people along with that as you enjoy it. So you live in San Diego, but you get to come here to Chicago, and so and San Diego's got a great food scene as well, and of course you're included in that. But so when you think of Chicago's kind of position, I talked about it at the beginning of the program, we've got the James Beard Awards are going to be here for another 4 years, and just kind of Chicago's elevation in just the regular food mindset as far as its position as far as one of those food cities. But you know, from the West Coast, how is Chicago viewed?
You know, from the West Coast, I have to tell you, I've always said that if I was ever to move east, I would definitely land in Chicago. I think that Chicago is kind of that up and coming city, and not in the sense that you're not there yet. I think, you know, everyone always looks to New York, as you mentioned earlier, as kind of that pinnacle. And I think that Chicago, in my personal opinion, has sometimes better food than New York. I mean, dare I say, I don't want to make anyone angry, but personally feel like I love Chicago. I have been there, I think, like 5 times in like the last 3 months. And I have to tell you, I mean, I feel like if I was ever to open up a restaurant in a city that Michelin was already there, I would establish myself. Knowing that I have San Francisco, you know, just a couple hours away, I still move to Chicago. It's such a great city. There's, you know, there's just so many amazing chefs, and they're doing things that, you know, aren't just for the sake of being, you know, ingenious. No, they are truly just people that are changing the culinary spectrum and using techniques and ingredients that are nowhere else to be found. And I think that on that aspect, you know, just in terms of being able to create things that are truly just genuinely new and innovative, I really look to Chicago for that. And I mean, honestly, it's not just food that looks good, right? It's food that tastes just as good as anything you could have, you know, from your mom or your grandma. So when you compare those things together, and have incredible food that tastes amazing and that looks even more amazing, that's an experience that I think anyone wants to have.
We'll let the listeners know we're talking with Chef Claudia Sandoville. Of course, you know her as the winner of MasterChef. She's going to be in town on the 26th for the Boys and Girls Club of Chicago, the Saison Soiree. And you have you've helped out and supported and been a part of and on boards with a number of different charities, and a lot of them have kind of youth as a focus. You're a parent. Yeah, as well.
Yes.
But let's talk about like you coming up as you kind of found your way into making, you know, being a chef and kind of a career in the culinary world is what you were in, as you were going to live. How did that happen for you? Was there a moment? Was it just, you know, in the home? Was it your parents that were an influence, or was it maybe a mentor somewhere?
You know, I think for me, it was definitely a mixture of everything. However, I do have to say I'm just a home cook. I mean, people call me chef because obviously the show is called MasterChef, but the premise of MasterChef is taking somebody that is a home cook that loves food and loves to cook and really help them to elevate their food so that they become MasterChef level. And I pride myself on that. You know, I come from very humble beginnings. I was a single mom. I'm still a single mom. But, you know, I was a single mom living in a one-bedroom apartment, sharing, you know, a bed with my daughter when I decided to go on the show and kind of take a leap of faith. And you know, I'm grateful for actually being able to take that off, you know, take that risk, because I had every reason not to. I had zero money in my bank account and zero in my savings and a job that I couldn't leave, you know, and I'm glad that I took that off, that risk, because imagine if I hadn't, right? I mean, I'm $250,000 richer now. I have a cookbook that is number one bestseller on Amazon, nice. In Mexican cookbooks. I mean, my feet haven't quite touched the ground, and I became winner September 2015, and it's been such an incredible ride. But, you know, I attribute it all to, you know, my mom, my grandmothers, who taught me kind of that sazon. You say saison, it's sazon, and sazon is like that seasoning, that flavor, that that love that you put into food. And you know, and then obviously the chefs, Graham Elliott, a resident for you in Chicago. You know, he was, I think, key in who I became as a chef and helping me to find that culinary voice. So many, many people that I can really, really attest to making me the chef that I can, you know, that I'm now called.
Wow. How exciting. I mean, and that is the kind of thing that people love those stories. So it makes for great entertainment. But in a lot of ways, as a role model, you're changing lives. And for this, the Boys and Girls Club of Chicago is the beneficiary for the event there. And what they do is, you know, at-risk youth, challenged youth, they try to find different avenues to keep them occupied, to help them, to kind of bridge those gaps that may not be there as far as support systems in the neighborhood, in the community, in the family, and kind of offer them some other options. A little bit, if you could talk a little bit about where oftentimes it would be sports-related, and there still is a lot of that, but now you're seeing, you know, careers in culinary as attainable, realistic ways for kids to find, you know, careers, because it is a passport. I mean, working in the food world and in the restaurant business, you can travel the world like that. It's a universal career, a universal kind of work language. And but talk about that, where, you know, some of these kids being embraced, you know, by the culinary community makes a world of difference for them.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's actually an excellent point. 2 days ago, I just had an interview with a local high school student in San Diego who needed to do a report on something that they loved, and in the career, and you know, they had to interview somebody in the career that they loved. And he reached out to me through my website, and his question was, you know, if I didn't want to become a chef, you know, because for whatever reason I felt like I couldn't reach that level, what else could I do in the food world? And you know, I think that with a lot of people, you know, put down food reality shows and things like that. However, I think one of the benefits of these shows is that it's really shed a light on a very, you know, a very humble job, and a job that a lot of people do almost thanklessly sometimes, and a job that really is only one piece of food. And I think that the best part of that is, you know, people can go into food writing. It doesn't have to be, you know, opening up a restaurant and working in either front of house or back of house. There are people who do pop-up restaurants. There are people who do fine dining. There's catering. And even outside of that, you know, you don't have to be a food blogger. You don't have to be a person that's taking pictures on Instagram. There's so much more than that. There are people that produce events like the event that we're hosting that are still attributed to food and that are specifically, you know, working in food. There's companies that specifically cater to people in the food industry, whether it's through the equipment that we use or our chef coats and the clothes that we wear. And I mean, just the other, you know, just a couple of months ago, Vans released like a new shoe or something like that.
Wow.
For chefs, you know, I mean, it's everywhere now. And I think that it's just opened so many doors and the possibilities are truly endless.
Oh.
And if we can share that with our youth, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it impacts in so many different ways, as you guys will be doing on Wednesday, October 26th, over at Shea Chicago, 247 East Ontario Street. CelebrityChef.Eventbrite.com is the site to go for tickets and more information on CelebrityChef.Eventbrite.com. And before we let you go, it's going to be great, because talk about some of the other chefs that are going to be there with you.
Yeah, so we're going to have local chef, Mexican restaurant owner Carlos Gaitan.
Nice.
Yes, who of course was a Top Chef finalist. We're going to have Katsuji Tanabe, who was on season 12, I believe. He's awesome as well. He was also very close to the top. And there's Amanda Baumgarten as well. So also Top Chef alum. I think I'm the only MasterChef person, but but hey, I'm the winner, right?
Yes, right.
But you know, these guys, Katsuji is known for his Hollywood tacos, as he self-proclaimed the king of kosher Mexican food. So I think it's going to be really exciting. I think we're going to be releasing the menu here soon on the website, so definitely stay tuned. It's going to be, you guys are going to just love that menu. It's going to be so yummy, and it's going to be worthwhile cause. What better?
Exciting stuff, and again, some great food, some amazing chefs, and all for an incredible cause. And so, Chef, before we let you go, if you want to give out your website, or people can keep up with all your adventures.
Definitely. It's Chef Claudia's, like with an S, Claudia's Cocina, COCINA.com.
So, Chef Claudia Sandoval, thanks so much for everything that you do. We'll see you on the 26th, and thanks for being in WGN today.
Absolutely. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
This is an exciting event at the Field Museum. It's the tattoos exhibit. It's a brand new thing at the Field Museum. And whether you have tattoos or you like tattoos and you see them now, especially in the culinary world, everybody's got tattoos. So it isn't just for sailors or motorcycle gang people as well. So brand ambassador for the one and only and one of our favorite rums out there, Daniel Gravy Thomas. Welcome to WGN.
It's a pleasure to have you. I appreciate it. How's everybody?
Now, how'd you get the name Gravy? Because you hear a lot of things. People look like Gravy and then the last name with Brown. But, of course, you're Gravy Thomas.
Yeah, Gravy Thomas, brother, and I have a tattoo on my arm that says, instead of U.S. Navy, it says U.S. Gravy, and it's a traditional Sailor Jerry tattoo that has a fun story behind it, for sure.
You know, when you look at Captain Morgan, you know, some of the other rum people that are out there, you know, it's just a guy in a costume, it's a pirate, but Sailor Jerry was a real guy, and he was a real guy that did influence, we're not sure necessarily, I'm sure he enjoyed rum on a, you know, within moderation is all things, but he was a guy that was a, you know, a real force in the tattoo world and a real influence, and it's kind of neat to be able to highlight the real actual guy behind what is a brand.
Yeah, man, sometimes I pitch myself, as I call this a job, as I travel the country, entertaining and enhancing and educating people on Sailor Jerry, the tattoo artist, through the Sailor Jerry Spice Rum that celebrates his life and legacy as considered the father of the old school traditional tattoo, who set up shop in the 20s in Hawaii and learned how to tattoo from actually Patch Thomas right there in Chicago when he came over to Chicago and joined the Navy in the late 20s. And I'm looking forward to coming into Chicago and expressing and continue to educate people on the legacy and the tattooing of Norman Sailor Jerry Collins, who was known to teach Ed Hardy a thing or two about tattooing, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Chicago known for so many different things, and we do have an absolutely incredible museum campus, and the Field Museum is a place that we enjoy going on a regular basis. And it's the one, you know, it's got dinosaurs, it's got mummies, it's got history. There's a lot of animal exhibits in there as well. But this is a little bit different, you know, for them to kind of take and have an exhibit highlighting and featuring the work and kind of the history of tattoos is a little groundbreaking.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're going to be going into over 5,000 years of the skin art culture, from artifacts to even early mummification with tattooing and, you know, the Edison machines. And, again, some of the traditional sailor tattoos that were given by the ones and only like Norman Sailor, Jerry Collins, where a sailor would want to get his life commemorated on his body. So you're going to be seeing works of not only earlier periods of time, but also the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, especially some of that Norman Collins artwork, that bold, traditional Americana style of tattooing that's going to be exhibited alongside other works of traditional tattooing, because he learned how to tattoo while in the Navy, traveling in the South Seas, learning from the Japanese, and combining that traditional style of tattooing with, you know, American pop culture, and came up to what we have today that's still a living, breathing thing. As you said, I get the pleasure to work on a brand and celebrate a person that was a living, breathing thing. And unlike the other rums or spirits out there, this embodies an entire culture, not just the liquid, but the lifestyle and the tattooing. So it's a beautiful thing that I get the chance to come into Chicago and celebrate this on a large museum scale.
Yeah, and it is a little bit different. I mean, there's a little more weight on you, and let the listeners know we're talking with Daniel Gravy Thomas, brand ambassador for Sailor Jerry. So instead of just coming up with great cocktails, which I'm sure you're going to do on October 20th for the event we're going to talk about in a little bit, and as you do, I'm sure, as you travel the country carrying the torch for Sailor Jerry, but you've got kind of this like history situation that you have to be there. So you're not just educating people about what they can do with the rum, but there is a lot of history you've got to share as well.
Yeah, for sure. And the beautiful thing is when I have what I call that aha moment, and, you know, where I explain the Sailor cocktail, you know, the spiced rum cocktail through a Jerry and ginger, which basically are 92-proof spiced rum Caribbean flavors mixed with a simple ginger beer. But then I can extend that conversation and show a piece of artwork of one of Norman Sailor Jerry Collins's ginger pinup images of a redhead ginger that he painted watercolor that turned into one of the iconic tattoo pinup pieces. So there's that synergy between not only the liquid but the lifestyle. Then when someone walks away from a tattoo shop with that pinup girl on them, so there's the walking proof of that Jerry loves ginger. So yeah, you can follow me at Gravy on the Rocks on Instagram and see that I'm in a different city working with a different bartender or a different tattoo artist or a different public, bringing this lifestyle and this legacy to life. I mean, let's be honest. It's a $1.65 billion industry tattooing is right now. No longer just, you know, the back alleyways or the port cities. It is now a dream commodity for sure. And artists are all over.
No, you're right. It is a mainstream form of expression where in the past, you know, either if you were, like I said, a sailor or a motorcycle gang, or, I mean, years ago, it was a certain either type of lifestyle or career that kind of lent itself to the whole tattoo situation. But now, at least here in America, it's pretty accepted, and it's something that you see on a daily basis in a way for people to express themselves. Now, do you know offhand for the exhibit that's going to be at the Field Museum? It's going to be there for, you know, a number of months, as all those exhibits are. Are they going to go back through the history of tattoos? You mentioned the Far East and some of those designs that as far as in Japan and some of those places where tattoos have been, you know, such a part of their culture forever almost.
For sure, buddy. You're not going to leave that museum with just thinking that the tattoo was the funny tramp stamp. No, you're going to leave there with learning that, oh, wow, there was a puncturing pen back in the day. Oh, wow, there was Christian pilgrimage tattooing for the long journeys that they made. You're going to leave there knowing that Chicago was one of the mainstays for tattooing for that 18 to 20-year-old sailor back in the 50s who wanted to commemorate. You know, they drove in from the naval station right there, 40 miles outside, you know, over in Great Lakes, came into downtown Chicago to get tattooed by some of the legends, whether it was Cliff Raven or Phil Sparrow out there in Chicago. And they wanted to exemplify and share their story, whether it was the swallow bird that meant 5,000 miles at sea, or whether it was the anchor who gave them stability. These were all things that they were living in a daily basis. So they wanted to get those commemorated. And again, it was body pieces that weren't even seen. Now you're getting neck pieces as your first tattoo. Back then, these were beautiful chest pieces that told a story that you may have not even seen if a soldier had his regular whites on. So we're going to go back then and even further back. And again, it's a great place to have it as the Field Museum, and Chicago could be the backdrop for this exhibit that'll be rocking out until April. So I'm excited to have, you know, sort of like a back office, I guess you could say, a backdrop where I'll be able to entertain it and tutor people on tattooing.
I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to, of course, taste some of the things that you're going to do. So before we let you go ahead and share some of the signature cocktails you're going to have for people there at the Field Museum.
Like I said, buddy, we're definitely going to do the Sailor Jerry and ginger. Again, spiced rum takes tastes amazing with a ginger root, a lively ginger root. So we want to exemplify that. And then ironically, I love speaking to radio personalities because not only was Norman Collins a tattoo artist, a rebel, a motorcycle enthusiast, but he also hosted his own radio show called The Old Ironside.
Really?
No, in Hawaii back in the day, and he was a captain of a ship, and he also was a radio host where he would get up and do his rants and his poetry and some of his music and things of that nature. So we have a cocktail based off of The Old Ironside, and then we have a Jerry Can because we want to, again, tie back into all of those lures and, you know, those long voyages of the soldiers. They needed to keep their rum fresh. So we're going to do some nice mixtures, showcase the old Sailor Jerry grog, the rum grog, and things of that nature that kind of ties in the period. And I could go on for days and days about Tiki, military, and tattooing. So hopefully you can catch me in the corner at the tattoo exhibit, buddy, and I'll see you for sure.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. Looking forward to it. And for those people who want to keep up with all your adventures and all the things that you're doing, share your social media if you've got like a Twitter feed or your Instagram or way people can kind of keep in touch with you.
For sure, buddy. That's at Gravy on the Rocks, G-R-A-V-Y on the Rocks. Because, you know, I try to keep life on the rocks, brother, and have a good time as I, again, entertain and educate people on the life and legacy of Norman Taylor Jerry Collins through the looking glass of our 92-proof spiced rum that you can get. And you can identify it through our Hula Girl that you see on the shelf. And that was one of his iconic pieces. One of those pieces of art that still resonates to the Navy and soldier men of today when I step to them and they come to me and we have these conversations about Norman Collins and they show me his old school pieces of artwork. And that's an amazing thing to have his artwork shown back to me from people who used to hang out with him. So come on out, Chicago and surrounding area, and let's get down to tattooing for sure.
Daniel Gravy Thomas, he's going to be out there showing his art on the cocktail side as we celebrate the art of tattoo. Dan, thanks so much for being in the show tonight. We'll see you on the 20th.
I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a break here. It is Dane in for Brian Noonan until 9 p.m. tonight on 720 WGN.
Let me hear you, everybody. A one, a two, a three.
Yeah, 720 WGN, Daniel in Allstate Showcase Studio, but thousands and thousands of people, probably, I don't know, there's at least 40-some-odd thousand in the ballpark, and then Wrigleyville, I'm sure, is packed. And this guy on the line with us is, of course, a good friend. You hear him on with me pretty regularly, and he is the physical embodiment, the communicant, the channeler when it comes to the ghost, the spirit of Harry Carey. Dino Tiberi is live in Wrigleyville. As I'm sure the excitement is palpable. Dino, welcome to the station.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. Or good evening. It's been a whirlwind tour here at the ballpark, and it's been a lot of fun so far. We're Wayne Messner belting out "God Bless America," and he's going to be singing the national anthem in just a minute. But there's electricity down here tonight again after last night's win in dramatic fashion with the grand slam putting the Cubs out in front. It's going to be a great one here tonight. I'll be hopefully calling in a little bit later on with another update while you're on the air, and look forward to tonight's game with Kershaw matching up against Kyle Hendricks. And it's going to be a good one, no doubt about it.
Yeah, the excitement is there, and of course, this is as big as it gets. And what you're seeing that's a little bit different, and we talked about it earlier in the program, is that at those moments where those kind of what we'll call them Cubs crossroads, where they would, you know, kind of veer into the gutter or into the ditch or into the loss and internal destruction, they seem to somehow, and even if it's not necessarily the people that you would think if you drew it up on paper, like this team always has somebody, you know, ready to come in and save the day.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And last night, Miguel Montero, you know, goes up and pinch hits and hits a grand slam. And then Fowler comes up right behind him. So they put up a five spot in the eighth inning after the Dodgers had tied it up off of Aroldis Chapman in the top of the eighth inning. So there was a little drama last night, and the crowd was going bananas. I had friends that were at the game that said the stands were actually shaking last night after that home run was hit. And it's amazing. You're right, Dan. In the past, we've been looking for the other shoe to drop, but this team just seems to be every time they're in a hole or you know, any kind of difficult situation, they seem to find their way out of it. So we'll see if there's more of that magic again tonight.
Well, the atmosphere is one of those things that has always kind of drawn people to Wrigley, and it's always a good time and kind of a magical place. But when you look at some of the footage, and you know, and I was not there, you'll see it in person. I know you've been to a couple of the playoff games so far, and the Cubs have won all of them at home so far. But it just looks like absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's just there's people everywhere. There was an amazing line to get in, you know, for a Sunday night. You know, all the electricity going on down here. Tonight, I mean, it's an important game for the Cubs to win, and I think the fans are going to be into it again tonight, just like they were last night, and hoping that we can somehow get past Clayton Kershaw, who's been, the Cubs haven't faced him yet this year, but hopefully, you know, they'll be able to get a couple of runs early, and, you know, he's a good pitcher, and he's one of the best in the league, and, you know, you want to get runs off of him early, because you don't want to have to him get into a groove, and then you're going to have some trouble, but, I'm looking for the Cubs. They did a couple tweaks in the lineup. They moved Hayward down to eighth. They've got Contreras in there catching. He's going to catch tonight. So Joe Madden making a few moves to try to get the lineup solidified, and hopefully they can get it done. And Kyle Hendricks has been solid all season at home, so we'll look for another one of those outings out of him again tonight.
Well, last thing before we let you get back to some of the festivities and hopefully what will turn out to be another successful Cub game. It's a historically tough ticket. You know, that's what they keep saying, is that these are some of the hardest tickets to get for those people that get down there. What is it? Is there like a going rate? Is there? I'm always a believer that if you just show up, you'll figure a way to get in. But what is it? Like, how much are some of the tickets going for people that just hoping
to? What I've been hearing is it's been you know, it just depends where you're at, obviously, but the upper deck tickets for the, you know, the 500 levels were going for $400 a seat. So, I mean, people are making, you've got tickets, you might be able to make some good coin. I think a lot of people I know that have season tickets, you know, they've sold some of them and they've, you know, tried to get to a game or two, but, you know, we've only had a few here at home so far. So hopefully it'll continue beyond this series. And, you know, but it's going for a good rate. I mean, we got a good rate here for the rooftop, which is great. And we're right next to the firehouse on Waveland Avenue. We got a good view of the park and good food. You know, good beverages are ready to go.
Yeah, just being anywhere near there, I think, is going to be exciting. Of course, so many people watching it on TV. Thanks, Dino. Get back to all the action. I'm sure we'll talk to you a little bit later on down the road tonight.
All right, sounds good, Dane. I'll talk to you guys a little bit later.
All right, 720 WGN. It's Dane in until 9 p.m. We're going to take a quick break here on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase studio here right on Michigan Avenue. And even though we are well into the month of October, it is a balmy night out there. And I think Rogers had said some of the weather. It's like 80-something degrees. I had the air conditioning on right now. I know it's going to be 80-plus degrees tomorrow. So getting out there, this is what you call Indian summer, I guess. I hope we can have like Indian winter, you know, whatever that is, as well. No matter what, you know, the weather may not be the greatest here in Chicago, and it may be a reason why we're not inundated with residents all the time. But the one thing that is consistent 365 days a year is that this is an incredible food town. We've talked about it throughout the course of the program, and one of the guys doing so much in the food community here with two different concepts. He's got Bud Long's The Hot Chicken. He's got Rub's Backcountry Smokehouse with the barbecue side, and he is in studio with us. It's the one and only Jared Leonard. Jared, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, talk about being a part of this, and you are as busy as they get. Not only just one restaurant, but two restaurants, and not the same, right? They're two totally different concepts. Are, you know, do you just love a challenge? Do you just have a lot of time on your hand? Are you looking, is there going to be like three or four different things? You know how like Let Us Entertain You has so many different concepts, everything from, you know, Wow Bow to fine dining at True. I mean, is when you see something kind of good, you say, well, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I think so. I like to have my hands busy. I like to multitask. I like to juggle a lot. So we started with just the barbecue restaurant and didn't really have a path to understand. Like we didn't have a goal. I loved cooking barbecue. And we said, hey, let's open a restaurant. And from there, we expanded into opening up a classroom. I have a barbecue education center up next to my restaurant where I teach classes every week from once a week to four times a week in a busy week. From there, we opened a barbecue camp in Wisconsin, so we have that going on.
Is it a barbecue fantasy camp?
Depends on. Yeah, sure, sure. Why not?
Well, because you know, a friend of mine ended up. He lives down in Texas, and they have at the I think it's the University of Texas. They have brisket camp.
Right, right.
Down there, and yeah. I mean, is it something that's really crazy?
Yeah. So I've got people up there right now, and like they're posting pictures of them smoking brisket. What I did is we bought a house on the river up in Rock County, Wisconsin, and we set up the backyard. It's 3 acres on the water, so you can boat and fish and all that. We set up the backyard with these massive commercial cookers, like stuff that you wouldn't have in a normal backyard. And, you know, because you're on vacation and you're up in the country, up in Wisconsin, it's a great time to cook barbecue. So people rent the house, and we supply all the wood, and the cookers are up there, and then they go up there and smoke briskets or butts or ribs or whatever and, you know, have a good old time.
The educational side is something I think that is really interesting, and you were along with on some of the stops of the Great Chicago Barbecue Tour that happened this week here in the city, where it had some, you know, famous Dave Anderson from Famous Dave, Sweet Baby Ray, Dave Raymond was there, Dr. Barbecue even came up, Ray Lampe came up, and kind of educating on the history, and we're going to hear from those guys coming up at 7:30. But that's really interesting that you can take that barbecue thing. It is one of the, I think, very few, or at least one of the best, you know, disciplines in the cooking side where people do make it at home. I mean, you could love French cuisine and you go to restaurants, but you're probably not doing it all the time at home, as well as, you know, a lot of other kinds of culinary activity. But like barbecue, like it's the one thing everybody does. Not everybody does it well. So when it came to like that education side, was it people coming up and saying, you know, hey, Jared, I want to know how to do this? Or were you saying, hey, we need better barbecue out there. Let's just get out there and start teaching.
Well, so it was born out of just the fact that we had a space. We have this massive wood-burning smoker that takes up half of a room, and we didn't do anything else with the other half of the room. So I started, and like barbecue guys would say, just like on the tour, hey, we want to see the smoker. And it, like Robert's place at Honey
Isn't
One.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, you go back there and we're all crammed in the room, right? Well, we built out our original classroom, which now we're on our second space, was just a big smoker. And then I put a bench along the wall and we got 16 people in there. Let me back up. It started out with just those casual pit tours where people would say, I want to see the smoker. I would bring them over next door, and we would be over there talking for so long. My wife, who was running in front of the house at the time, would come over, and she'd be like, you've been over here for an hour and a half. The guys in the kitchen need you. Get back. And so I started doing it in more structured form, where every Saturday we would have 16 to 20 people in there and talk about barbecue for 3 hours. And I've taught 605 of these classes, over 600 classes in the last 4 years. We do these, I mean, weekly, and it's not just barbecue people. It's people who love to eat, you know, who love to cook, but many of them don't have smokers and maybe never will buy smokers. And I always make the joke that through my class, I'm not really, my goal isn't to teach people how to be great pit masters. My goal is to inspire them to love barbecue as much as I do. And for some of them, for many of them, they'll realize it's more work than they're willing to do, and then they can come buy it from me.
No, I think that's good, and that's valuable information. You don't want to aspire to something that may be more frustrating than it is beneficial, right? But barbecue is one of those rare things where people do care, and they do want to sit around and talk about it. Really, because you're not talking about rutabagas.
Right.
There's nobody sitting around and taking a class on asparagus.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. And then also, and I love this, and we did get to see Robert Adams down at Honey One. I think it's on 43rd Street. You get a chance to get in there and you see the aquarium smoker and you're just like, whoa, wow. You have people getting their pictures taken with it.
Right.
People don't get their pictures taken, you know, next to a fryer.
No, right.
Get right here. Right. Let me see this refrigerator.
Right.
Let's do this. So it is this kind of phenomenon, you know, where people are, you know, why are people so excited about it? You know, Dave will say that it, you know, it's our inner caveman and we're hardwired to want to, you know, meat over a fire and everything that surrounds it, you know, we're just excited about it just as a species. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it goes back to that. I mean, if you read about food history, cooking meat with fire is really what started cooking in general. Before we had fire, meat was eaten without any flavor on it. It was really hard to digest and chew on. And so even, you know, people who are try to explain the evolution theory will say that even our skulls and our teeth evolved over the years after we started eating cooked meat as opposed to raw meat. So it really has a big, you know, cooking with fire has been a huge influence on our society back to thousands of years ago. So I think it is that inner caveman. And then I also think it's just there's so many ways to do it, you know. With barbecue, there are pretty, like, you know, solid regional styles, like Carolina style is whole hog. Texas style is usually beef cooked over post oak with indirect heat. In Memphis, they do a dry rub. So you have all these defined styles, but then you've got this, like, you know, in the last 10 years, since the Food Network's become popular and people want to learn how to do this stuff at home, you have this, like, melting pot of styles now that aren't specific to a region. Like, that's how I cook. And so, you know, it's just that just never-ending education and learning about all the different ways people cook barbecue, and it's all interesting and good. And, you know, I call it backyard beer science. Like, you'll listen to Robert Adams talk about barbecue and the way he does it, the way he does it, and why he does it that way. He believes that's the way to do it, and that's the only way. I'm the same way. Dave Anderson's the same way. Dave Raymond, Gary Wiviott, all these barbecue guys have this real strong passion for doing it their way. And we all have a mutual respect for each other, right. But it's like, you know, it's very ingrained into us, like, this is how you do barbecue, you know?
Passion, I think, is the consistent theme, you know, that people are very excited about it and been doing it for decades, right? And just are so dedicated to what it is that they do, why they do it, and the history. I mean, you should have seen it. Like, up there, they were all arguing about the origins of this and when this started and who did that. Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that just doesn't happen, I think, in any other arena in the food world, right? It's just like, okay, it is what it is, and it's great. But barbecue is a unique thing. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, what you're doing down there with Rubb's Backcountry Smokehouse, and also some of the other concepts that you're involved with. And then, of course, Revival, you know, where you guys, along with some other really great people in the food world, are offering up another opportunity for your fans to get what it is that you do. We're going to take a break. We've got Jared Leonard in studio for the next 15 minutes. It's staying here on 720 WGN. WGN, it is Dane Neal here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a beautiful night. People walking all along Michigan Avenue just in T-shirts enjoying it. I know it's not going to last forever, but hopefully it'll last for, you know, a few more days. I think that's great. Usually it doesn't, I don't know, is it going to get cold in November? Have you looked at some of the extended forecasts, Jared?
All I know is we're playing baseball on the north side in October, and it's 70 degrees. This is a little weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. I wish it would be kind of cold. You know, you talk about bear weather.
Right.
You know, of course, you've got the Los Angeles Dodgers. Typically, they're used to maybe warmer weather, and if we could, I don't know that we're any better at tolerating cold weather as far as the Cubs team, but they do have sweaters, but the action on the field is definitely hot tonight, and so hopefully the Cubs will get a win. So Jared Leonard is in studio. He is the man behind Bud Long Hot Chicken, behind Rubb's Backcountry Smokehouse, and great to have you here in the studio and visiting us. And you did make a pit stop because you've got your wife and your daughter here at the Dylan's Candy Shop.
Yeah, they're filling up on sugar right outside the window here. Eating the modern version of Fun Dip, which is the bottle that you dip the, I don't know, the little thing. You know what Fun Dip is.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before the show.
Yep.
Now you get a sucker, and you dip it in the sugar, and now she's just using her fingers.
For the listeners, it kind of is a bottle, and you unscrew it, and maybe there's like the dip. And the end of the cap is some kind of extended thing that you dip into a sugary, powdery substance, and then you lick it. And now they're doing it. Instead of just, like you said, the kind of chalky, kind of made sort of the sweet tart consistency, now they've got really what is a lollipop, right?
So right, it's sticky. It takes more sugar on, of course.
No, as a guy that has done multiple concepts, always looking for, you know, something great that you can make on the food side and share with people, any chance that maybe a candy store in the future. And for the listeners who've never been to Dylan's, it is full-on Willy Wonka. Like, you walk in there and you're powerless to restrain your kids, as I think that there's some subliminal mind stuff in the music, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's crazy.
It's loud, and I said to my wife when we walked in, I said, do you think they play this loud, energetic music so that, like, when your kids are yelling at you, hey, get me this and get me that, and the music's going, that you're just like, okay, you can have whatever you want. We just got to go.
Sure.
It's beautiful. It's fun.
Yes, and you know that they've got scientists working on all the ways that can entice the children and make them just demand everything, and they get it. Like, for our kids, when we bring them to the studio, it's the way to keep them in line. You kind of bribe them with, hey, we'll stop at the candy store.
Right, it's good.
So Dylan's is there. So, but when it comes to stores and some of the things that you're doing, you know, people are addicted to the hot chicken.
Yeah.
You know, and so talk about that. It's the Nashville hot chicken. It's a craze that is sweeping the country, something that's been going on in Nashville for a while. You've got Bud Long's, and this was the kind of thing when you knew you wanted to do it, you did some research so that it would be right.
Yeah, I've always loved fried chicken. I love Southern food. I love comfort food. And I was down in Nashville. We were developing a concept to do a second restaurant. We wanted to do fried chicken. And I was actually in Nashville for a barbecue conference, and I had this Nashville hot chicken, and I was like, this is fantastic. This is before everybody got all nutso about it, you know, and it was really just isolated to the city of Nashville. And down there, they've been eating it for 75 years.
Right.
I mean, this is not a new thing. It's kind of like when Northerners have barbecue for the first time. You know, like, did you grow up in Chicago?
In the Midwest area, okay. Yeah, so, Wisconsin, Chicago.
So, like, yeah, the northern side of Chicago grew up with, like, fall-off-the-bone ribs covered in barbecue sauce, like places like Twin Anchors and Gale Street Inn. Those are historic Chicago places. Then you go to the south and you have this smoked barbecue, and it's, like, a totally different thing. So when I had hot chicken down in Nashville, I was like, wow, we need to bring this to Chicago. So I'd already been developing this fried chicken idea, testing a bunch of different recipes and having labs where I had other chefs in and
really?
Friends and customers. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Dialogued it all on Facebook and just getting people's votes on what was the better way to make it and doing biscuit research and just really diving in. We opened up our first restaurant on a shoestring budget, not having a clue what we were doing. And our second restaurant, we wanted to be planned out a little bit more and really, really take the time to do all the just be very organized about it.
Right.
So Budlong was that journey, and started making Nashville hot and came up with a really good way to make it from it's like a four-step process to from our chicken dry brine to our wet slurry, our dry dredge, a period of time where it settles, and then the frying method, and then the final technique to paste the hot on it after the fryer. So, you know, and I kind of combined, we did all this different testing, and then I combined the best ways of making fried chicken with the best ways of making it hot, because Nashville hot chicken is like a post-fryer technique.
Right.
So after it comes out of the fryer, it gets this cayenne pepper-infused oil on it to make it spicy. So, but the core of that is you first need to learn how to make good fried chicken, which is a lot
That's hard in and of itself, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought, how hard could that be? It's barbecue has all this, like, you're cooking with wood, and there's regional styles and all the different meats that you're cooking. So I'm thinking fried chicken, it's one protein. You just bread it and you fry it, right? I'd love to teach classes on it just because there was just so much depth in that as well, just really learning what the different techniques did to the chicken and what made one, you know, what we liked about each technique. So that was fun. We did everything from cast iron skillet frying to deep frying to all the different oils, learning more about smoking points of the oils. I'm really into the education side of food, and it's just I'm fascinated by the science. And I guess more than just the science and how I understand it, because I can Google all this stuff, the fact that most of these recipes came from, like, you know, your grandma in 1940 who didn't have a computer or a book or anything. She just trial and errored everything until it was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at just the work that goes into it, and then all of those processes, so much, you know, research and development had to take place for Budlong. But, you know, we're happy to have it here, too, though. You know, it's the kind of thing that has really caught on. So how many times do people have it with you? And I've had it. It's great. And you do have, you know, different versions for whatever kind of hot level you can stand, right? But it's super tasty. How many people come up and say, like, I didn't know it could be like this?
Yeah, we get a lot of people who have had the Nashville hot but haven't had it the way we do it. So, yeah, we have a lot of repeat customers and people that have tried other renditions of it in Chicago and just been like, wow, this is something great. So we have our store downtown, Revival Food Hall, like you said, that we'll serve anywhere from 400 to 500 lunches in a day. It's just crazy. That food hall is just such a cool idea to bring good food concepts down to the Loop.
Yep, and we're going to talk about Revival Food Hall in just a couple minutes, probably right after the news, because that's, I think, an important thing, too, because not only are you there, but some of Chicago's favorite places are there as well. We're going to take a quick break. It's staying here on 720 WGN. Little Tom Jones for you. 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal here in the Allstate Showcase studio. In studio with me is Jared Leonard. You know him from Budlong with the Nashville Hot Chicken, of course, Rubs Backcountry Smokehouse. And they have their places, their brick-and-mortar places that people know, enjoy, and get not only great food but also education and products. And one of the things that that Jared is doing along with some other, you know, great Chicago restaurant and culinary personalities are bringing versions of some of the things that they do to a place called Revival Food Hall. So, Jared, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So let's talk about Revival. Like, why did you, you know, you're there, Table Donkey Sticks, you know, Scott Manley is there, Barry from Smoke Barbecue is there, along with, I think, maybe 10 or so other people. But describe kind of the concept, the thought process, and why you got involved.
So the guys from 16 on Center Restaurant Group, who are partners in Longwood and Eagle, they own Dussex and Promontory, Empty Bottle, Music Hall, a couple other things in town, Bite Cafe, great restaurant group. They started planning this food hall with the idea that they wanted to to allow neighborhood restaurants to have a presence downtown without the risk and the expense and the hassle, basically, that, that would prevent most of us from opening a location in the Loop. You know, downtown you're going to get your chain restaurants and your Potbelly, and nothing against those restaurants. Everybody works hard and deserves whatever success they have. But the neighborhood joints don't really look at downtown as opportunity because it's just there's too many variables, too expensive, whatever. So they bought this building called the National Building at 125 South Clark Street on the northeast corner of Clark and Adams. And the upper, however many stories there are, the upper stories are offices, and the ground floor is a food hall, which is a fancy term for, you know, a food court. It, main difference being that this food hall has all independently owned restaurants, no chains.
So Panda Express is not there.
No Panda Express.
Sbarro?
Nope, none of that. None of that. It's all restaurants that have a presence in Chicago and are all locally owned that now are downtown. So so far we opened in August, and it's been really cool to see the people from the Loop, the Loopers I call them, to just their eyes light up like my kids in Dylan's Candy Store. they have all these great food options now for lunch, where before they were really just, you know, the standard downtown food was their option before. Now they have all these great restaurants. So,
oh.
I mean, it's been a lot of fun. The group, the 69 Center group, has been great to work with, and all the other restaurants who are down there. It's actually just mind-blowing to see how many fresh ingredients and how much preparation goes into a daily service down there. Because, you know, the thing with the chain restaurants is everything gets shipped to them in big plastic bags that are vacuum sealed, and they heat it up or unpack it and assemble, and it's a very, you know, airline food type of process, right? But all of us make everything from scratch, and we do it every day. It's all fresh. Scott Manlin, his concept is called Donkey down there.
Right.
They have a Donkey and Stick guys. They bake all their bread down there in the pizza oven from Union Squared, which is a pizzeria that bakes all their pizzas down there, that makes their dough on site. Antique Taco does, like they have like 32 ingredients in their tacos, and I'm maybe exaggerating, but they're downstairs doing all this veg prep, and it's a ton of work.
See.
That is just so impressive that every single day this is happening, where you don't have to do that downtown. You just turn on the sign and say, hey, we're open and we're selling whatever. All the office people next door are going to come and eat your food because they have to. They don't have options.
It's a captive audience.
Exactly. But so this is really bringing good food to that captive audience. And so far, the formula's just been great to see.
It's neat to see that, you know, for all the reasons that you guys as a collective and all of those representations on the restaurant side are so appreciated and beloved, that you brought that and you're doing it the same way. So all the things that they like about that, as hard as it may be, you're bringing it to that smaller concept and those new audiences over there at Revival. So one more time, it's at 125 South Clark Street.
Yep.
For Revival, and get out there and see it. And that's where you have the Budlong
Hot Chicken. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So before we let you go, and for those people that have texted in and called in, yes, as soon as we come back from this break, we're going to have our Chicago Barbecue Tour guys on. We're going to have Famous Dave. We're going to have Sweet Baby Ray, Dr. Barbecue, Gary Wiviot, Meathead Goldwyn. They're all going to be in with us for that. But for you, Jared, like, where can people find you? You know, either on social media, of course, at the restaurants.
Yeah. So check us out, the Budlong. We have a Facebook page, Instagram, and Twitter account, and like all those pages. Follow us. And then Rubs Back Country Smokehouse. Our Instagram is Barbecue Supply. And then on Facebook, just look us up, Rubs Back Country Smokehouse. The websites are backcountryq.com. That's backcountry, the letter Q.com. And then Budlong is thebudlong.com. So you can read more about our locations and addresses and upcoming projects. Rub has one location, but Budlong is something that we're going to have a couple of and be opening up all over town. So
it's a great stuff. Get out there and see Jared's places and get some of that education too. Get into some of those classes and get some of the things so you can start doing barbecue at the highest level and enjoy it. So thanks, Jared. Thanks for being in the show. Get out there and do that. When we come back, we're going to have, of course, the Chicago Barbecue Tour guys in studio. So keep it here at Stain on 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Famous Dave here, America's Rib King, at WGN Radio with Dane Neal.
Baby, don't you wanna go? Come on. Oh, baby, don't you wanna go?
720 WGN. It is Dave Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue in Chicago for what is, and oftentimes here in this building, Tribune Tower, a lot of history happens. But the history of food and the history of barbecue is so close to Chicago's history, but is one of those histories that is kind of, I think, for the greater public and the greater food enthusiast and food fan public, kind of unknown, right? And so who better to tell those stories as barbecue is the hottest thing going, and it's the kind of thing that is influencing so many cooks and so many websites and products all over the country, is the people who influenced it from the get-go back. We go back to the 82 Mike Royko Rib Fest, and a good friend, Ray Lamp, he tells that story of being there for that media-inspired festival that, you know, had beer and barbecue front and center with Dave Raymond, Sweet Baby Ray, Charlie Robinson, Ray there. They're just kind of enjoying it. You know, this is before barbecue was a career, kind of saying, like, this is great. We're recognizing that. How do we get to do more of that? And they certainly have done that as Hall of Famers, brand ambassadors for the Big Green Egg, the greatest selling barbecue sauce, chains that are beloved around the country, in studio with us. And we've got some other people, too, that are Chicago barbecue personalities that have done so many great things. Gary Wibbiot from Barn & Company. With Low and Slow, he's an author. We've got Meathead Goldwyn, who's an author and an educator. Barry from Smoke, who is, I mean, it is one of the most beloved places. And, of course, the other guys mentioned, Hall of Famers and legends nationwide, but with Chicago as their home. And here's the guy who is, this is his brainchild, his barbecue brainchild, famous Dave Anderson. Dave, let's talk about Chicago barbecue.
You know, Dane, I'm really excited to be here, and for me, this has been a lifelong dream to really acknowledge how Chicago, which had the largest stockyards in the world and has really been known as hog butcher to the world. And my own story of barbecue really gets started out way back when my dad, who's a Choctaw Indian from Idabel, Oklahoma, met my mom, who's a Lakota Ojibwe Indian from Hayward, Wisconsin. And the story is really somewhat of a tragic story in many ways, that both my parents were taken from their families and put in Indian boarding schools. And so they actually met in Haskell Institute for Indians in Lawrence, Kansas. And then my dad went to World War II, spent 4 years on the front. But when he came back, 1945, married my mom, and they moved to Chicago because that's where all of the jobs were after the war. And to show you how passionate my family was for Southern home cooking and barbecue, my dad used to haul my mom down south every other weekend till she learned how to cook Southern. But but where the barbecue comes from is my dad being a Southern boy, my dad was a construction worker, an electrician. In fact, when he retired, he was one of the senior foremen in the electrical union for Sears Tower. He was one of the Indians that would crawl up those antennas and change light bulbs. But my dad tells me that when he started working here, he quickly recognized that some of his black coworkers would sort of disappear during lunchtime, but when they came back, they had some of the best-smelling hickory-smoked ribs in their lunch buckets.
So no bologna sandwiches there.
No. And so, you know, and this goes back to the 1950s, and I can remember as a little kid in the late 50s, my dad bringing home ribs in his lunch bucket. So the history of not only Famous Dave's, but the history of Chicago barbecue for me resonates all the way back to the 50s.
One of the things that you guys all do, whether you're working in restaurants or writing books or out there as ambassadors, is you are carrying that torch for barbecue wherever you go. And, of course, you have Chicago at your roots. And Ray, we've talked about, again, the Royko Rib Fest and how just the light bulb went off. Like, let's try to do this. But talk about it as you kind of have traveled and paved, as you guys all have in many ways, paved a way for a career and kind of giving people what they wanted in an area that didn't exist before. And now all that demand is meeting what you guys are given.
Oh, yeah. We're so lucky to be in this industry at this point. Barbecue is growing like crazy. I like to think that we've all helped to grow it all, but we're also all serious beneficiaries of it. But to go back to what Dave is saying about Chicago not being recognized, it's absolutely true. The barbecue's here. There's no question question about it, but it's always been ignored. We're talking about these places that have been there for 50, 60 years. In Kansas City, they'd be famous. They'd be in every book, and everybody'd be writing about it. In Memphis, it would be a big deal. Everyone would go there and worship. Here, nobody even really knows who they are. So it's such a cool thing to get the opportunity to recognize
them. And over the years, people have kind of said, and I've always kind of said, oh, Chicago's got some great barbecue, got some great history, got some great personalities. But you wonder why. You know, was it there were better storytellers in those other places? Or I kind of say that Chicago is just so big and has so much going on.
Well, I'm just going to say it. Chicago is a very segregated community. Not in a bad way, but the white people live over here and the black people live over there and the Germans live over here and the Polish live over here, just the way Chicago is. Barbecue, to me, was dominant on the south side where the folks that came from the south. We know that. That's true. The white people, as I was growing up here, they all came from Ellis Island. They didn't know anything about barbecue. So, I mean, a random white guy that was interested in it or had come from the south, but in general, it was just that line. And I think the historic barbecue in Chicago is definitely in the black neighborhoods. I mean, we'll get into the whole, what I call steakhouse ribs. We can think of some as a nice way to say it. The white people were eating ribs that were cooked. Ribs versus barbecue. You know, ribs were cooked in an oven with a little barbecue sauce smeared on them, finished up right next to the steak. You know, we can discuss all of that. That, to me, that was the two things.
But I kind of want to tail off on that, because that's how today the Great Chicago Barbecue Tour got started. We haven't recognized the historical significance of the Chicago Aquarium smoker, how meats are cooked right over live glowing embers. Going back to what Ray was saying, I always knew my family was different growing up here in Chicago, because when all the other little kids were going out for burgers and hot dogs and pizza, my dad was packing us up in the family station wagon, and we were headed down to the south side of Chicago, where we would go to Lem's, or we would go to the Rib Palace. There was a place on Kedzie and Lake called the Sprague's. It had the hottest ribs in town. There was Farmer Brown's on Clybourne and North. But a lot of the best-tasting ribs were on the south side of Chicago.
And you've got great ribs, and you've got, of course, great sauces, and you've got all those things as you guys travel the country. You know, Dave, your restaurants are all over the place. Ray, you're all over the place. Sweet Baby Ray's is everywhere as well. And I wanted to ask you, like Dave Raymond here, you know, as people around the country enjoy Sweet Baby Ray's, like how much of your history and kind of just your experiences in Chicago, those flavors do you build into things that people, even if they don't know that's Chicago, they're enjoying across the country?
I'd say most people are not familiar with Chicago as being a barbecue mecca. I feel it absolutely is, but the purpose of today is to give recognition to the south side and west side barbecue places. But I think there's a ton to be said for north side barbecue, which would have been Carson's, Gale Street, Twin Acres. But what they may have lacked in true quality barbecue, they made up with tonnage and smiling faces and happy people and just thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people getting more familiar with barbecue. So you put that all together with the amazing meat shops, produce houses, bread stores that got the backyard barbecue enthusiasts more into grilling and barbecue, and the restaurants, while there's a great proliferation of barbecue in the southern part of the United States, up north of the Mason-Dixon line, we have barbecue and we have quality ingredients and great providers and all the good foods you need to produce great barbecue. So when you put it all together, I think Chicago really stands on its own, not in the first tier of the four barbecue areas, but we're right up there at the top of the second tier is how I see it. And as I travel around the country, what I got credit for was not so much my barbecue sauce, but cooking at Taste of Chicago. I mean, Mike Royko was a big deal, but Taste of Chicago, where we were doing 40, 50,000 servings in a 10-day period and 12 and 13,000 servings in one day, not that other people couldn't do that. Most other people didn't have the opportunity to do that. So to be in Chicago, where there is segregation, but there is great diversity, there's many, many, many things that can be accomplished in any facet of barbecue or grilling or any other thing you choose to do.
So as you guys share what it is that you've done with America and, of course, with Chicago as the roots, you're developing a lot of fans, people that want barbecue here in the city. Gary Wiviat has been doing it for so many years. He's over there at Barn & Company. He's authored books, Low and Slow. So Gary is a guy doing it in the restaurant on a daily basis. You know, and people come in. Do they say that there's a difference between Chicago barbecue? Or what is it that you put in it that keeps your fans coming back?
Well, I mean, the cliche answer is I put love and experience in it. But, you know, what I'm doing is I'm trying to use all the knowledge that I've gained to make the best product, the best barbecue that I possibly can. And I think that there is a little bit of a difference when you're using smokers such as aquarium smokers, like at Uncle John's or Lem's, where you're cooking direct over wood. And then you're using smokers such as Bear uses, Southern Prides or Cook Shacks. And there's a little difference in flavor. And what you're doing is you're making that north side as opposed to south side barbecue. They're both equally delicious. But I also think that we're in danger of losing the south side aquarium smoker barbecue because it's more of an artisanal product. And just in the last year, James Lemons of Lem's and Max Evier of Uncle John's had passed away. And they were two of the best, most knowledgeable, wonderful personalities in the barbecue world. So I like to think of myself, I'm a lot older than Barry. I like to think of myself as a real Chicago barbecue guy. Barry certainly is. Meathead is doing his part. We're all doing our part to promote barbecue.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And we are going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to hear from Barry Sorkin of Smoke Restaurant, including all of these barbecue legends that we have right here. So a quick break. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Before we went to the news, we have all of our barbecue all-stars in on this. Gary Wiviat from Barn & Company was talking with Barry Sorkin from Smoke and kind of looking into what they hope to accomplish and what we hope to accomplish with this Chicago barbecue tour. Well, you're promoting barbecue and also kind of embracing and I think taking hold of Chicago's legacy and history as one of the greats, if not one of the greatest, barbecue cities in America. And Gary mentioned you, Barry, and your place is, and you've seen Barry Sorkin, of course, on television. He's highly acclaimed all over the place and with good reason. But I think, and what I've known talking with you a couple times, that you are a really receptive to the history of Chicago, to some of the people that have been there and done those things that have made what it is that you do not only so great, but so popular.
Right. I mean, it's sort of interesting. I'm in many ways, like they talk about how Chicago didn't recognize this great barbecue history that we have. In many ways, I'm an example of that. I grew up on the north side and never had been to Lem's that is growing up, never had been to any of these places growing up. But interestingly, the place that first inspired me is a place called Heckey's.
Heckey's in Evanston, yeah.
Which is doing very much a South Side style barbecue on the north side. And so I may not have been aware that I liked South Side barbecue, but that was the first experience I had getting inspired by barbecue. And then beyond that, I'd done some traveling and been outside of the Chicago area and been to some of cities that are normally considered the barbecue meccas of the country. And that sort of inspired me further, and what we ended up doing is sort of an amalgam of the two, I would say.
Gary had to be the first guy in Chicago aggressively selling really good brisket. Because, we haven't said this yet. When we talk about Chicago barbecue, it's pretty much about ribs historically. Barry was the first guy who really brought brisket that I think.
And I sort of portray Barry to be Chicago's own Aaron Franklin, where Barry Sorkin has lines wrapped around the block from the time he opens till he closes.
I knew about Barry and his brisket a long time before I knew about Aaron and his.
He doesn't have as good of a publicist.
Barry has a national reputation for his brisket, and it's well deserved, and we are all very proud.
I agree.
Barry and his brisket reputation.
I agree with you, Dave, and it is kind of whoever may dovetail into whatever media thing is going on or a different area is getting folks. That's part of what you guys are doing and that we're all doing today is kind of putting that spotlight on Chicago for its history, on the barbecue side as well. And Barry, you are one of these, as these guys talk about, and they are, national figures, but not necessarily aligned perfectly with Chicago as far as their identity. But you really are. As you travel, people say, hey, there's Barry. It's Chicago, wherever you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And it's funny because I don't think that that was entirely intentional on our part. I think, you know, in many respects, we were sort of right place, right time. We do a couple of things well. But, I mean, I feel like Chicago at the time, Chicago's barbecue scene, while it had this great history, maybe needed a little bit of a refresh. And I don't know whether we were just a spark that kind of kicked it off or whether it was going to happen with or without us. But, you know, we were just happy to be a part of it.
Well, and, you've talked about it, too, and you're appreciative of it and aware of that history. And, of course, and as everybody has said, we're super thankful to have you here kind of leading that charge in the present-day barbecue world as well. And Meathead Goldwyn is here. He is in Chicago, a best-selling author, a historian. He's got one of the most popular websites related to and dedicated to barbecue with AmazingRibs.com. So Meathead, what is it? You know, what is it that drew you here to Chicago, and what is it about all of this that drew you to this event, Chicago Barbecue, and what is it with, as you share kind of that education and a lot of those insights with people all around the country, what is it that makes barbecue and what you do so popular?
Well, I've always been interested in the history and the cultural aspects of barbecue, and I would take minor issue with Sweet Baby Ray about Chicago being at the top of the second tier. I think that there is one of the reasons that Kansas City, Memphis, the Carolinas, Austin, and the rest of Texas have their distinctive reputations is because there's a distinctive style. And the discussion of the aquarium smoker came up. For people who are listening that don't know what an aquarium smoker is, it's essentially a large steel box, rectangular, like a giant coffin. And it's very similar to the pulley pits that they use in Texas. It's built so that you can cook over logs above ground. Used to be they dug a hole in the ground.
It's like a cajachina kind of thing.
Cooked in the shade, under a shade tree. That doesn't fly with the health department anymore. So they had to put it in a steel box, and they enclosed it with some glass walls so that they could capture the smoke and send it out the chimney and not deal with the pollution issues. But basically, it's the direct descendant of a pit in the ground, the old shade tree barbecue, which was brought north by the African Americans after the cotton gin took their jobs in the fields during the Great Migration, and then again in the build-up and during World War II. In the industrial era, the jobs were in Chicago. They came north, settled on the south side, wanted to cook under the shade tree like they used to. They created or founded this, I don't know the exact history, Wiviot probably does, of the aquarium smoker, and started working with that.
Let me just interject. There's glass on all four sides. The glass also moves. And a lot of people don't talk about this, but if you open the glass in certain ways, you create a vortex of smoke that actually swirls inside that, and that's what bathes the ribs. But the other thing about the Chicago aquarium smoker is that being right over the live fire is that the meat juices fall directly onto the burning embers. They explode up into the smoke, which comes back down. There's just a taste that you don't get anywhere else in the country except over these aquarium smokers.
It's a grill and a smoker. And if I could just comment back to my good friend Meathead, Chicago is also the home of Weber Grill, which is a multi-billion dollar company, and Kraft Foods, which is also a multi-billion dollar company. So when you factor in everything Chicago, that's where my...
And as I travel around the country and I share kind of those things, people aren't aware that, like, Weber's right here, because it's just so... I think it's just so ingrained in everybody's lives. People are just so used to it. There's going to be so much history and so much history being shared and memories and everything from you guys. So, Dave, where are we going to go today?
Well, we're going to be going down to the south side of Chicago, right into the heart of some of Chicago's oldest storefront barbecue joints. We're going to be visiting Lem's. We're going to go to I-57 Rib House. And if we have time, we got a couple more on the schedule. But the whole idea is to show America what Chicago barbecue is all about.
I'd like to add one other thing. The aquarium smoker got its nickname, aquarium smoker, because of the tempered glass in the smokers you can see in. And that gave it an aquarium effect. You would see the meat bathing with the smoke. And people started calling it an aquarium because they could see into it, not dissimilar to an aquarium with fish in it. And the other thing is, I always get a little sweaty when everyone justifiably praises Barry's brisket, because I think our barn company's brisket is
noted.
Once again, I would go to the to the metrics, the 42 briskets that Barry makes a day and the 70 that he makes on the weekend, I think would speak for themselves.
The lines don't lie, and that is for sure.
What about the ton of chicken wings we sell a week?
if I can just jump on that subject for a second. To be honest, Gary, I get a little uncomfortable with it, too, because the fact of the matter is there is a lot of great barbecue in Chicago.
Yes.
People doing great brisket, and we're incredibly grateful for the reputation that we have, but we recognize that we are not the only
It's well-deserved, too, Barry. Ben, Chicago is a beautiful, wonderful city full of food-centric people, and there's room for everyone.
It is a beautiful city. It's a delicious city, and we are going to see and hear from so many places that have been beautiful and delicious for so many years but maybe haven't gotten the attention that they are going to get today. So, guys, I want to thank you all for being here in WGN. It's going to be exciting on the tour. We're going to have a recap as well. And thanks so much for what you're doing, guys.
Hey, thank you. I am so excited to be here and really honored and humbled that Dr. Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue is here. Gary Wiviot, award-winning author with Low and Slow, and of course my good friend going back for a long time, Sweet Baby Ray. I mean, this guy has got his sauce all over the place. And then Barry Sorkin, one of my favorite places I've always stopped every time I'm in Chicago, and Meathead, just an incredible wealth of knowledge in the world of barbecue. So I think you couldn't ask for a better group of folks to be traveling around the city of Chicago today on the great Chicago Barbecue Tour, acknowledging the history that Chicago has its place in the world of barbecue today.
It's the Great Chicago Barbecue Tour. It's facebook.com/FamousDaveChicago, and you can go ahead and check that out. For those people that do get a chance to see it live, you can definitely comment, and we're going to have all of the handles and information and all of the websites for all of our participants here today up at WGNRadio.com. And Ray, as we finish this up, the guy who traveled the furthest to be here, what is it that you hope you're going to take away today other than just some great barbecue?
Yeah, that's really what I came for, to hang out with my friends and eat some barbecue. So that's all I really need today.
Mission accomplished. Guys, thanks so much for being in WGN.
Thank you.
What an amazing opportunity to have those barbecue legends here with us at WGN in studio. And when you think about amazing, you know, and the theater experience has changed so much over the years. So stay tuned. As soon as we come back from this break, we are going to have Stuart Bowling. He's the Director of Content and Creative Relations at Dolby. They are putting in some absolutely incredible advances into some of the theaters in the Chicagoland area. So stay tuned. It's staying here on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal here in the Allstate Showcase studio until 9 p.m. Lise had mentioned that her brother, at least, of course, our producer for today right here, and responsible for the great music that you hear as we come into every segment, huge Cubs fan, and her brother is watching the Cubs game at the Logan Square Theater?
Yeah, Logan Square Theater.
Right. Now, someday they'll be able to create a theater experience that will replicate, you know, the Wrigley Field environment, whether it's the, you know, the sound, the feel, the shaking of the bleachers, of all of those things, and kind of put you there even if you're not at the park.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, guys like Stuart Bowling, they're the ones that can come up with that and make that stuff happen. In the meantime, over there at Dolby, he's the Director of Content and Creative Relations, and he is bringing an elevated theater experience to us. And I got to tell you, Stuart, watching movies these days, especially in the theater experience, with everything that they have to compete with, is second to none. It's a lot different than it was when I was growing up. I mean, you've got the recliners, you've got the food, and, of course, incredible picture and sound. Stuart Bowling, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. Thank you so much for having us on the show. This is great.
I have to let the listeners know that you are one of the most distant callers that we've had. You're calling us from New Zealand right now.
That is correct. Yeah, I'm out here on a business trip, so pretty far, 20 hours, I think, 22 for you. I don't know, something like that.
Now, New Zealand is a place where, I think, isn't that where they filmed a lot of the Lord of the Rings movies and some of those other super fantasy classics?
It is. It is. I'm actually in the middle of Middle Earth, which is Wellington, where the home of Peter Jackson and Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, you know what? As far away as New Zealand is, and all the amazing things that happen there, you guys have some great plans for some of our theatergoers here in the Chicagoland area with the sound and the things that you guys are doing. So describe what people are going to be experiencing at some of the theaters around town.
Absolutely, yeah. We just recently opened the Dolby Cinema AMC at Hawthorne 12 in Vernon Hills. And, you know, at Dolby, we, you know, we've had a long history. You know, we started in sound, making improvements, creating surround sound. And then the last decade, we spent looking what would be the next generation of picture technology. And your, you know, your listeners may have heard of high dynamic range. And we've created a technology called Dolby Vision that allows us to deliver high dynamic range images, on large movie theater screens. And in combination with that, we also have our immersive, surround sound system, Dolby Atmos, that allows us to put sounds, localize them down to an individual loudspeaker, 360 degrees around the auditorium. But also have speakers in the ceiling over the audience to really immerse them in the environments that these filmmakers want to go on. And so as we approach the next generation of cinema, we said, okay, if we use a combination of cutting-edge technology, what else could we do different inside a movie theater? And if you think about going to the movies, it's about suspension of disbelief. It's about being entertained. It's about being lost in the moment. And so, you know, partnering with an amazing company like AMC allowed us to build these incredibly cutting-edge, state-of-the-art theaters where, you know, we take into consideration the viewing lines inside the theater, so no matter where you're sat, you have a perfect view. We also curve the seating area so that if you happen to be off towards the edge, you don't have to twist your body, which, you know, you may become uncomfortable in the movie, and then you kind of snap out of the movie. So we curve the seating, so ergonomically you're positioned towards the screen. We put large screens in, wall-to-wall, to ceiling, and that way basically just fully immerse the audience and allow these technologies to really create the powerful moments that filmmakers want to elicit all of these emotions from their audiences.
You know, we're going to take a quick break and we come back. So, Stuart, hopefully you can, you're going to be able to stay on the line because we're going to hear from you. And I want to know, you have been working in the movie industry at a very high level for your entire career, trying to take the stories that, you know, that the actors or the animators have in mind and try to really enhance it and bring it in its best possible way to the viewers. But, and I'm wondering, you know, if it's the kind of thing that you have said over the years and since, the late 80s in the movies is like now technology is kind of caught up with maybe your desires of what you hoped you could bring to people. So we'll talk about that in just a second. We're going to take a quick break here on 720 WGN. It's 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a beautiful Sunday night, the kind of night that you're going to want to get outside and enjoy, hopefully enjoy and celebrate a Cubs victory. But as we get towards the winter months here in Chicago, one of the great things to do to kind of immerse yourself in a non-weather related situation is go to the movies, and you're going to want to have the best cinematic experience that you can. And Stuart Bowling has been doing that for so many years and now bringing an elevated movie watching experience to some of the AMC theaters here in the Chicagoland area. Stuart, welcome, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Dane. Cool.
So let's talk about this because you have spent your entire life in the movie industry kind of making parts of those experiences as good as they can be. And is it a situation where you as a guy who is watching it saying, oh, I wish we could do this or I wish we could do that. And now I guess technology is making it where it's more possible maybe to do some of those things with the sound and the picture. I mean, we have, you know, high definition TVs and 4K TVs and 3D TVs. So it's out there. Is that part of it? Or is it that you just, you know, there's so much competition for the entertainment dollar and the movie industry just had to elevate?
You know, it's probably a combination of both. I mean, I think, you know, our industry has, you know, continued to evolve and change. And that's a combination of, you know, looking at technology rapidly changing and what we can achieve with it. But a lot of our success is actually driven by the creative community You know, that we're in a very fortunate position. You know, people like myself, we work with filmmakers, and it's really the movie making side of the industry that helps to also drive the innovation factor, because they will come back to us and say, I would love it if I could do this. What if we could do that? You know, and as we like develop Dolby Atmos, we develop that in, you know, collaboration with the sound community and re-recording mixers, sound designers, editors, et cetera, that help deliver that generation of immersive audio experience. And then as we developed, you know, as you were talking about 4K high dynamic range, you know, having laser projectors to deliver a much brighter picture now, that we basically, we did the same again. As we developed the technology, we would bring directors, we'd bring cinematographers and producers in and show them this is the potential of technology that can come. Would you utilize it if we bring it to market?
Well, you're seeing this, these new advancements that Stewart is working on are going to be coming to the AMC Theater in Oak Brook, in Hawthorne, in Crestwood. And so for people that get out there, what are they going to experience? What are they going to notice first that's different about what's going on?
So the first thing they'll notice is that the theaters are different. They look different than a standard theater. Like, our interiors are matte black because it's all about not having bright colors distracting you. It's all about really focusing your entire attention to the screen. In certain locations, we have a signature entrance where we have an audio-visual pathway. Instead of a standard door going into the theater, you're looking at projected images, which are thematically tied to the movie you're about to see. So that way, psychologically, we're trying to put you in that mind frame going on that journey to watch that movie. And then inside, you know, you're looking at, a nice big theater. The way the layout of the theater is different. And then once the lights go down and the movies roll, then, Dolby Cinema titles that we enable to play in these theaters, like Jack Reacher and Never Look Back, that's coming out soon. You know, movies like that are mixed in our immersive sound technology, and then also the upgrade to the picture. You know, where you're seeing it, and you know, you're seeing incredible detail in texture and lighting, and it, when the image is more engaging, psychologically, you're pulled more into the story, and so that's the advancements that, you know, filmmakers and the studios really like, because it allows the a completely different way of storytelling.
We'll let the listeners know we're talking with Stewart Bowling, Director for Content and Creative Relations over at Dolby. He's calling us from New Zealand as well. And you made me think of something here where, with these new advancements, are all movies going to be able to be viewed at these theaters, or is there only going to be certain movies that are going to be able to do it, at least to start off with?
Yes. Yeah, so like any new technology we deliver, it takes time to build out. But, we've delivered over 40 motion pictures that have been created in Dolby Cinema, and that list continues to grow. In the fact, you know, we've only had the technology just over like a year and a half almost. And so eventually every movie you'll be seeing in these theaters will be, but as we build that up, then even your regular movies that you see that are not created in this technology will still look more spectacular, because the technology helps make it look better than it would do in a standard theater. And then the sound system, because we design the acoustics of these rooms, you know, Dolby's put a lot of research and technology in there. And so that way you're being treated like royalty almost, in that you're seeing and experiencing these movies exactly the way, these mega A-list filmmakers get to see them when they're creating them at the studios.
I can't wait. And then another thing, as far as the advancements in the in kind of the theater experience that you're seeing going on at more theaters around the country, is some food, beverages, you know, get some elevated situations on the concession side, but also just the comfort. You know, the chairs are just amazing.
Absolutely, yeah, because that, again, is an important factor of the movie-going experience, that you don't want to be in a seat that's uncomfortable. If you're fidgeting, you're no longer focusing or being lost in the story, and that all of these details are taken care of, so that, you know, you walk in, you have a beautiful, clean theater, exceptional comfort, electric recliners, and then just being, you know, blown away by whatever story you're going to see to be entertained by.
It is pretty exciting stuff. I mean, to be able to do that and to have it coming here to AMC in Oak Brook, and then the AMC at Hawthorne and in Crestwood. Now, Stewart, is there a website or any place that you would direct people to find out more about the theater experience and some of the advancements, or an AMC in general, or should they just kind of visit their local theater?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can go to AMC.com and search for Dolby Cinema, and you'll be able to find information there on Dolby's own website, on Dolby.com. You can find out more about what the technology inside these cinemas, also the titles that we're creating. And then also, you know, as we continue to roll these theaters out, AMC is accelerating their deployment several years ahead of schedule. And so, you know, you guys are incredibly fortunate to have three of these in, you know, an amazing city like Chicago. And then the fact that, you know, we have 31 right now. There'll be 50 by the end of this calendar year and another 50 across the U.S.
Wow.
By the end of next year. So we're incredibly excited to be delivering these experiences.
AMC.com and Stuart Bowling, thanks again so much for taking time out to call from New Zealand to fill us in. One of those people, we love what it is that you do, trying to make our lives more fun, and kind of elevate our experiences, especially with something as great as movies. So Stuart, thanks so much for taking time, and thanks for being in WGN today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Stuart Bowling. Wow, get out to the AMCs in Oakbrook, Hawthorne, and Crestwood, and more coming soon. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Mark Carman is going to be joining us, I'm pretty sure, from Wrigley to give us an update on the Cubs situation, the mayhem, and hopefully the success that's happening up there at Wrigley Field. It's staying in for Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Wow. A Star Trek-themed corn maze. You take farm and then outer space. That's one of those things. 720 WGN, it is Daniel in here, Allstate Showcase Studio until 9 p.m. And there's a lot of places that people would rather be, 40,000 people in the park and probably, I don't know, 20,000 outside. He is at the park, our very own Mark Carman. Mark, what's going on out there?
Well, Dane, it's a little nail-biting time here. Bottom six. Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers starter, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, had a perfect game, no-hitter going into the bottom of the fifth. Cubs finally got a couple of base hits, had runners at first and second, but Jason Hayward popped out to end the inning. So now we're fast-forwarding to the bottom of the sixth. I'm sure you can hear some crowd noise here. One out, Dexter Fowler at the plate, and Cubs are trying to slowly get Kershaw out of the game here, but he's only thrown 58 pitches,
wow,
which is way less than what he should be at this point. So they're dealing with a monster on the mound tonight.
Well, they knew that this was going to be tough. You know, Clayton Kershaw, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball and historically, you know, just generally awesome. They knew they were going to face him one, maybe two times in this series. What do you think is the goal to try to, of course, he's trying to avoid that, take pitches and get to the bullpen?
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, he hasn't pitched deeper than the seventh inning ever in the playoffs, but that looks like it's going to happen tonight. And, you know, here's a guy that started last Tuesday, then pitched out of the bullpen on Thursday, and now is back on the mound. It was a big debate of whether he would pitch game two or game three and whether he'd be rested enough. I think he's answered those questions that he looks pretty rested to me here, Dane. So, you know, but it's a 1-0 game. You're talking about one run, so Kyle Hendricks is out of the game, so it's up to the Cubs bullpen to hold him there, and we'll see if, you know, they can push one across here. There's plenty of time, but you know, they got a big challenge in front of them at the same time.
Well, how does the psyche of the team and maybe the fans kind of change when you look at what's happened in that game in San Francisco and, of course, you know, last night's game where anything can happen? Whatever happens, happens, you know, up until the ninth inning, and they're never out of it.
Oh, there's no doubt that these guys feel like, you know, no game is over until it's over. That's for sure. I do think there has been a shift in the fan base, too. You talk to Cubs fans right now, and most feel like the Cubs are going to win the World Series, that this year is different. I mean, I feel that way. And I've had the 84, 89, 98, 03, 07, 08, 15 disappointment in my life. You've had the same thing. So it just does feel different right now. But, you know, until they do it, they haven't done it, right? So, seven more to go, and I mean, tonight's huge. If you can beat Clayton Kershaw, that puts you up into a great, great, great position.
And what's the vibe at the park? I know that people know that they're not necessarily out of it, but when I was watching the game last night when Miguel Montero hit that home run, I've never seen the place more absolutely crazy, insane.
Well, they're about to rise to their feet right now. You're going to get the serious amount of noise. Three balls. We're into Will Dexter Fowler, you know, a base hit or a walk. So, my experience with the park so far in the playoffs has been the place goes completely crazy when something happens. But when something's not happening, I can still feel the tension. I mean, loud and clear. There's it's not like it's an unbridled. We have this. There's a nervousness still about the Cup fan, whereas they go nuts when something great happens, but there's still when there's potential danger, it's pretty quiet.
Well, we'll let you get back to all the action, and of course you'll be checking in with us through the rest of the night, I'm sure, and keep us posted on any action that happens.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. We'll be on after the game on WGN for our post-game show, so looking forward to doing that, whatever that will be.
Okay, hopefully you'll talk about a win. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dave.
You bet. So, it's kind of those things, but I think this Cubs team has conditioned us to not necessarily worry so much about, one game here or there. You can't figure to win them all. But now you know that even if the game has gone kind of bad throughout the whole game up until the ninth inning, that anything can happen. And it can happen, I think, from anybody. You know, we're looking at some of the pitchers hitting. We're looking at, Miguel Montero, a guy that came in and pinched hit. And so exciting stuff. It's going to be great no matter what. And I think that people would be, I don't want to say satisfied, because I think that this is an opportunity where you've done everything right during the regular season. There's almost nothing that you would change, 50 games plus, over 500. You have all of your players. You have two MVP candidates. You've got like three potential Cy Young candidates. I mean, I don't know what you'd go back and tweak. There's so many times through history where you say, hey, we'll get as far as we can. But if we only had this, or we could go back and tweak this and maybe get ready for next year. So I think this is the year to win it. And people have said that the Cubs, have an opportunity to go ahead and win multiple World Series. You don't want to say that, of course. And as Mark mentioned, you haven't won anything yet, but the pieces are in place. The foundation is laid and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great ride no matter what. I don't know if it's as exciting as a corn maze that is, Star Trek themed. So Lisa mentioned too, because this is the time of year on the fall side where you have some of those fall festivals where they pop up, out of nowhere, either at a farm or something. A lot of pumpkins are there. I got a chance to go to one that was the Pumpkin Fest Pumpkin Festival in Summit at 5700. I think you can still get out there and enjoy a little bit of it, where they had pumpkins and rides and burros and food and vendors and the zipper, and I think the Tilt-A-Whirl was there. So all your fan favorites from the carnival side, but with a whole fall festival. Do you ever get, as a kid, did you ever get out and do any of that stuff?
Yeah, well, I'm being reminded now with the Star Trek corn maze. I actually went to a Cubs Sox corn maze.
Is there like a corn maze company? Like, we're the best guys.
I was thinking it must be the same one. But like the aerial view is, what was the Cubs and the Sox logos.
How do they do that? Usually we rely on aliens to come down and do kind of the crop circle thing. I didn't know that we had the ability to do that.
I guess that satellite thing helps. How do you do that?
I don't know. If I did it, I know that it would be crooked, but the or like messed up, or geez, it doesn't even say the right thing, or whatever. But it is a maze, and
but
those,
nobody ever finds out because you're just
because you got to be a you got to have a helicopter.
Trust.
You just say, hey, this is what it looks like. Get an artist's rendition. Last year we went to, and I'm not sure, 312-981-7200. If you know it, it's up on it might be on Golf Road. It's in Hoffman Estates, and it was so crowded, but it was an absolute great time. Everybody had a lot of fun for the fall festival up there. And it's at a farm, that is normally working and doing farm-like stuff through the rest of the year. And then they have maybe a month or two of the fall festival. But it had exotic animals like, ostriches and tigers. And there was even an opportunity for a camel ride. And, with the kids, we ended up putting them on the camels. Because when is the next time you're going to have an opportunity to ride a camel?
That's a good question. I think it's Gobert's Farm.
Gobert's, yes, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
They've got a pumpkin patch and, yeah. Man, I can't believe it's already mid-October.
It doesn't feel like it. It's nice out. It's 80 degrees.
Yeah. I need to go pick some pumpkins real quick.
Is that the best place to get them? You can get them, of course, at the Jewels. You can get them other places, but.
Yeah, but when you've picked it, it's like so satisfying.
So you actually pick, like it's growing on the vine, or is it just in a pile in the field somewhere?
Oh, I don't know. But picking apples is also a really great thing. Down in Champaign, I've gone to, the big apple orchard down there, and it's like
See, those are the kind of activities that you have, like in the fall, where families get together and you do the hayride. Maybe you pick a pumpkin. You certainly go to one of these festivals or these kind of farm-based, fall event locations. And they really have done more. Maybe it started out 20, 30 years ago where maybe it was just, hey, come pick a pumpkin. But then they decided, hey, we've got thousands of people here. Why don't we have other things to do? You know, so then you've got food vendors, you know, and cotton candy and gift shops and all sorts of things built into it. I don't know what tigers, giraffes, and camel rides have to do with, you know, fall in the Midwest, but it was kind of exciting.
I've been too into the Cubs to, like, think about anything else.
So what do you, so you're here, obviously, but you're a huge Cub fan, and so are you on pins and needles, or are you the kind of person that, you know, there's a little part of me that feels like, hey, if I'm disappointed, I don't want to get too high as far as emotions, you know, when they could just lose, that it isn't one of those lightning in a bottle situation where the team is really good, but all the players are going to be gone or old or not good next year. It seems like the Cubs will be good for a while.
Yeah, I think just it's about visualizing, you know, that last run on, you know, the World Series night, and just picturing
it's going to happen.
Like, you're
going to see it live. So Roger, I know that that you multitasking on the attention side and watching the Cubs, of course, as you have to, because it's news, yeah. And then also kind of paying attention to other things. But mm-hmm. you know, as a guy who has seen a lot of seasons and seen a lot of disappointment on mm-hmm. the baseball field, does this year it's got to feel a little different?
It does feel a little different because it's 2 years in a row. It's not like in the past where they've come close 1 year and then a team is decimated. They start trading people off, or it was like a miracle year where people overachieved, stuff like that. This is, you know, this is the second year in a row. Let's keep going. But, you know, I lived through 69. And and I've been a Cubs fan forever, but it's I'm still cautiously
optimistic.
Yeah. It's like I want to scream and yell and cheer and everything, but I don't want to be so devastated if something bad happens that I like sit in a dark room curled up in a corner for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
We've just been hurt so many times,
yeah.
Right? It's tough for us to come out of the mm-hmm. come out of the corner and get in the sunlight, but hopefully we will. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap the whole thing up. It's Dane here on 720 WGN.